Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Question I ask every day. Good morning. Amy Jacobson here. I don't think I can hear myself. Hello. Hello, how are you? This is John Anthony.
I mean John Anthony.
I'm Amy. You're John. And welcome
some
to
days.
John and Amy. AM 560 The Answer. Oh no, that was 12 years ago. Eons ago. John Anthony here from Black is Right.
Yeah.
Radio, which is Saturdays from noon to three.
That's right.
Yeah, I nailed it. I can
Thanks
go home
for having
now.
Me.
See you later. This can start to a 3-day weekend here. And boy. Do you think the city's ready for the violence?
No.
Somebody tweeted out, I never hoped that it would snow. Wait a minute. I never hoped that it would snow in Chicago on Memorial Day. And we say that because, well, I don't have my papers here. But yeah. There was a one-month-old baby girl who was shot last year during a mass shooting in the head and lived.
I remember.
261 kids, 17 and younger, were shot in Chicago. And here's her mother. They had a celebration when she turned 1 year old.
Yeah. It's just like a resurrection of Christ. It's a joy to see that.
This really a testimony, and this a story that when she get older, she could tell a lot of people.
I don't know if I'd be, look at me. I was a one-month-old who was shot in her head. But her mom is gracious and grateful to God, because God is good, right, John?
Yes, he is.
That her daughter's alive.
All the time.
It means everything to see my baby still here with me, living and doing very good.
And her mom describes what it was like when her daughter was shot. They were just outside going from the car into the house. It wasn't like it was 4 a.m.
Insane.
Or just, you know, south side of Chicago.
It was very hard for me to see all that blood and to hold my baby head. She just was staring at me. Made me know that she was all right.
And the first responding lieutenant was there for the celebration as well.
Going from that day of the shooting to today, seeing her smiling, her wearing her little crown, it just fills my heart with joy.
312-642-5600, turnkey DAPRO, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Anybody coming downtown for the 3-day Memorial Day weekend?
I'm not.
I used to go to the Bean. My kids are going to prom next weekend.
Yeah.
Both Peyton and Eli, and they, you know, wanted to go to the Bean to take prom pictures because it would be a really pretty view in the city skyline. I'm like, nope.
Not worth it.
Took that off the list.
Nope.
We're thinking about going to Lincoln Park Zoo. I'm like, nope. Could get a flash mob at North Avenue, and that could make your life miserable. Yeah. So that's off the list.
Yeah.
And now, like, we can go to Winnemac Park, which is a beautiful park.
I have
right
no
by
need
their
to go
high
to
school. But there's you're former police officer.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've got, you know, we've talked about all the weapons we own here on the station. But I'm sure as a former
weapons,
cop.
What's that? I don't own any weapons.
As a former cop.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
You carry or have a concealed carry your own weapons. And that wouldn't even make you feel safe to come downtown?
No, nothing. I have no reason to go to Chicago. I mean, anything can happen now. I mean, now, granted, anything can happen where I'm at in Joliet as well. But there's a far greater chance of something happening to me in Chicago or one of my loved ones that... seeing all that, the flash mobs and the fighting. I mean, they were fighting at a crime scene where somebody had just got shot. They were still fighting.
They're still fighting. And I drove by there 2 days ago, and there's still crime scene tape up at Chicago Street, right across the street from Holy Name Cathedral, where Cardinal Supage had a big prayer, and he should, he's a cardinal, the 10 people or 13 people were killed by that white supremacist in Buffalo, because he was a white supremacist. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says. I read part of that 180-page manifesto.
But he was a leftist white supremacist, right? They don't count, though, right?
They don't.
Yeah, they don't count. It don't count if they're leftist.
Oh, was he a leftist?
Yeah, that's some of the stuff that I'm reading. He was a leftist.
Really?
Yeah, he wasn't a Trump fan or anything like that. That's how it normally comes out.
right.
Trump fan. Trump created this monster. No, come on, people.
He didn't create the monster.
I just hate the rush to judgment on all of these things. All of these shootings, there's so much rush to judgment. It's like, wait, hold on. Take a deep breath. There's facts that will come out on every last one of these shootings. The initial take is always wrong.
Right.
It's always wrong.
And what about his parents?
Right.
I mean, he's living in his parents' house. He's experiencing mental illness. Kids, mom and dad, I know you love your babies. Yeah. I know you do.
Yeah.
Turn him in.
Yeah.
The Connecticut shooter, Sandy Hook. Jared Loughner, I say his name because his parents live in my mom's neighborhood in Tucson.
Really?
And they knew. He posted pictures in a red thong holding an AR-15. I always get this wrong. An AK-15? No, an AR-15.
Oh, my
Did I get
God.
That right?
Yeah, AR.
Yesterday I was calling it an AK. An AR-15. And you don't think that there's something possibly mentally wrong with your son?
Well.
And he got kicked out of Pima Community College because of mental illness. Yeah. And now he's six. You know where he is, everybody? Listen up, some mass shooters. He is six stories below the ground at a prison in Denver, Colorado that has no light. When they say you will not see the light of day.
That's true.
He has never seen the light of it. He is in a cage like an animal,
gets
out for just an hour, but has never seen the outside.
You ever see, they all have that
so
look.
So crazy. Yeah, no, and if his mugshot too, he's
gaze.
That crazy look.
Yeah, I would tell people.
But the reason why I brought up the shooting at Chicago and State is because Cardinal Supich said a prayer for the folks in Buffalo, New York, as he should, but never mentioned anything about the people who were killed right in front of his church. The steps of his church, there were people murdered.
Doesn't fit the agenda. Doesn't fit the narrative. That's why.
There have been four mass shootings in Chicago in May alone, and we're not done with May.
Yeah. No. Summer of love's coming, though.
Oh, summer. We're not that year. It's still, summer starts June 21st.
We're still in spring. Okay.
So what are we, the spring of what?
Spring of carnage. That's what's happening.
That's true.
The spring. What 2,000 people have been shot already this year, something like that? That some astronomical number?
I mean, all I know, we've had four mass shootings. Literally, I can't keep up with COVID numbers, with this. You know, it's just, it's all too much. And then if you go to Millennium Park, you have to get wanded down. Have you seen that? So that you walk
I haven't been
in,
to
it's
Chicago.
Like going to Great America. We have seen the video? You walk in.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Where's my story? It's not here.
1,160 people shot so far this year.
How many?
1,160, 236 homicides.
So far?
Yeah.
236 dead?
236 homicides.
And
according to Hey Jackass.
And it's so bad in Chicago that I remember there used to be a time when gangbangers and drug dealers would respect the media.
Yeah.
Like we'd pull up at a scene and they were doing their business, you know, sitting in the chair, the nice SUVs and fancy cars from the suburbs coming by and buying either crack or heroin. They would ask you, hey, when are you going to leave?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'll do a live shot at 4 or 4:30, and then all the other stations are going to come and play catch up. Well, I'll be out of here at 6:05.
Yeah.
And we were.
Yeah.
2 days ago, Joni Lum, who I love dearly, she used to be at Channel 9. She's now at Fox 32, and I wish I had my paperwork. But she was at the corner of Hubbard and Clark and doing a live shot, and a guy comes up. Have you seen the video?
No, I have not.
A guy comes up. So I'm pretending you're Joni Lum.
Ahead.
You're Joni Lum. You're doing your thing.
I got my
a guy
up.
Comes up like this. Lunges at her head with a gun.
What?
And the cameraman, and then walks away. And then when he walks away, he's skipping like this with the gun out. So he's skipping like this with the gun out. If you're watching at the Matrix Home Solution, you saw the reenactment. But thank God that gun didn't go off.
Yeah.
But what a punk.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
He's a punk. And first he comes out of the coffee store with his Starbucks, and then he comes back, like delivering it to somebody, and then he comes back into frame with the gun. And guess what's
a gangster that's going to Starbucks? Nice.
And guess what's above the Starbucks?
What's that?
The Cook County Sheriff's Department satellite office that they just opened up.
Oh, so right. Listen, Amy, I know you're telling the truth because I'm from the hood. I grew up in the hood.
I was just there for a press conference.
And
Hubbard and Clark.
There were times where, you know, they didn't mess with cops because it would bring too much heat.
Right.
You didn't mess with the reporters.
There was a line drawn.
Yeah, there was a line drawn. These kids today, there's no line.
And you should see this punk's face because they freeze it because police are looking for him to question him. And he's gone. Like that, that's the devil working there.
Yeah.
That is Satan.
Yeah.
That has taken over.
Yeah.
It is so crazy.
And you know what? That's what you keep hearing people say it's mental health. No, some of it is just pure evil. It's not mental health. It's pure evil. These people, I mean, there's an evil going on across our land that, I mean, something has to be done.
And I wish people had gotten their life, but at this point in time, I don't know if God would can help.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even say that because there's always God. But it, I mean, really, it's every time my players leave, I just worry. Half of them live all over the city. And I just pray when I drive home, please make sure that he gets home safely and he gets home safely. And because they take CT all over the southeast side, you know, they live all over. And, you know, you just as a parent and as a CPS employee, you just pray that you're going to see them the next day.
See, that's
and that they'll
reasons.
Be safe.
That's why I left Chicago. Because I don't have that thought, you know, where I'm at.
Really?
I
wish I could live like that.
I don't think about it.
I wish I could live without hearing sirens all the time. And choppers occasionally, but it's a constant sirens, ambulance, siren. And I live near Thorick Hospital, so of course, you know, you're going to hear it more. But it just doesn't stop.
Wow.
And it hasn't stopped since the summer of 2020.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Big Fun Friday here at AM 560. The Answer. John Anthony in for. Who are you in for?
Dan Prof.
No. And yesterday, we had the debate, do I go to the press conference or do I get my hair done? And what do you think I chose?
That press conference.
Wow, did you hear that, Justin? Justin and Quinn were like, you should go get your hair done. Mm. Justin, do you think I got my hair done or I went to the press conference yesterday with Dr. Awarde?
100% hair.
Thanks for the backup.
That man's about to get married, by
the
way. He's engaged, so
nice.
He's learning. You know what? Does this dress make my butt look big? Justin, answer the question.
Absolutely not.
Thank you. See? That's how you do things here.
Sucker.
Well, so we moved yesterday from medium to high. So they had the press conference, and they officially said that we went to the high level after the press conference. And, you know, just to get us ready for it. She has a recommendation. Not ready for mass, but she is imploring all Chicagoans. Mm. If you care, John, if you care about me, if you care about Justin, you're going to get yourself a mask.
No.
And you're going to strap that bad boy on your face and you're going to like it.
Nope.
If our hospitals are getting threatened, at the moment, we're at high because we've got these high case levels and we're starting to see some pressure on the hospital system, you know, a ways away from Chicago. But even while there isn't a mandate in place, we ask everybody for this short time period while we're in high, put that mask on, especially if you're in an indoor crowded setting.
Oh, God.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Are you ready to put the mask back
on? I'm not.
Are you ready for possible? And then she said there's more mandates that could happen.
Of course.
If, you know, if this, you know, if we continue forward, because, you know, there's always this new variant that could be lurking around the corner.
Last week, the FDA and the CDC.
Are you worried about stopping short of a mask mandate?
Let me try this again.
And I am concerned we could get a new variant, for example, that is really infectious and we're seeing totally different viral dynamics starting through, and we would have to potentially do this. Nothing that I'm seeing in the current Omicron surge suggests that we're going to see anything that's out of control in terms of infections. If anything, we're already seeing some plateauing. But I think the main thing is trying to maintain trust in the public. Know that when we are putting requirements in place, it's because we really need it at that time.
And the weird thing is that the reporters are begging for masks. And I love Sarah Schulte from Channel 7.
Yeah.
I've known her because you know people more that you're out on the street with than you do your own coworkers. Because if you're a good reporter, you're never inside the station. Right. But she is a little COVID cray-cray.
Oh, God.
Last week.
Are you worried about stopping short of a mask mandate is really just going to further spread COVID? I mean, let's be honest here, human behavior works by when somebody makes them do something. I was at an event last weekend, graduation. I think less than 5% of the people were wearing masks in an indoor setting.
So we've talked a lot about this, and let me tell you how we're thinking about this. Number one is that I very, very, very strongly encourage masking at events like graduations, you know, large events that are pulling a lot of people together. We're in strong support of any business or other setting that makes a decision to require masks during this time. You know, like I said, I go to the theater partly because I know that everybody is required to mask in that setting.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Are we done yet?
No. I wish that we were. But if you look at hospitalizations, really for this, the start of the pandemic, 50 to 60 Chicagoans were dying each day.
Right.
Guess how many are dying right now?
One, two.
Zero to zero. One.
Yeah.
That is why, Sarah Schulte, we do not have a mask mandate. And people need to realize it's okay to get COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, people are so fearful that they're going to get it that some, you know, that it's, you have to tell them it's okay.
Right.
This is like a condition.
Right.
But she didn't stop there, my girl Sarah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We got it. What? What? What do you mean we're not masking up?
And
I know you're a doctor, not a politician, but there are many people out there that say that mask mandates are never going to come back because this is an election year.
So I can tell you that here in Chicago, if our healthcare system is threatened, I would not hesitate to put a mask requirement back in place. This is a big conversation across the country that may not be true in all parts of the country, but it's here. It's true here in Chicago. I really feel very strongly that if you're seeing, the last thing we want is COVID to get out of control again, right? When we're having an average of zero deaths from COVID a day, we don't need to turn our lives upside down. We don't need to be putting, you know, the requirements for all in place.
I know.
I mean, this is psychosis.
You see my face, right?
Oh, I know.
Okay.
You ready to go back to that?
I'm not going back to it.
Do you think Chicagoans will? Because this is the first time I think that people might, excuse me, stand up and say no.
Well, hopefully.
And just say no to masking in schools.
Yeah.
You know, I've got until July 15th if I'm not boosted again.
Oh, God.
I don't have a job.
You serious?
CPS says vaccine mandates. You have to be vaccinated and submit a proof of all vaccinations and boosters by June 15th or you will not be employed.
So they
the
got
fall
rid of
2022.
So they got rid of the or be tested?
Yeah, no more tests. No more tests to stay. That's gone. Which may be a positive because maybe that means they're done testing kids in school. Because if my kids are sick, I take them to the doctor.
Yeah.
I don't want them taken without my knowledge
right.
to the care room inside their school because that's what's going on. And I don't know what Dr. Awardi is going to do because come July 14th when CPS is out, CPS and the teachers and staff, 43% of daily testing is Chicago Public Schools teacher and staff members.
Wow.
So what are they going to do? The system should just be dissolved. I mean,
can we stop testing?
It's over. Oh, I know.
Stop testing, people.
Oh, we lost our playoff game and our other because people were out with COVID. They didn't have COVID, but their parents thought that they might have had COVID.
Let's just do what
it has affected soccer teams. It's affected in the professional teams and high school teams.
Let's do what the Obama administration. Just stop testing.
Wait,
they stopped testing. They just completely stopped testing people.
Oh, because they changed the narrative.
Right, of course. Because
when SARS came.
Yeah. Just stop testing and
make it
this
go
goes away.
Yeah.
Stop testing. Go. Stop going
but
out.
Then you
and
have left leaning reporters who have an agenda. Well, not even an agenda. I don't know if Sarah Schulte has an agenda, but a fear inside
they
her
all have
heart.
An agenda.
That, no, she's. I think she's scared of COVID. That you know she's going to get it. 312-642-5600, and then they ask questions. And it wasn't just her; it was other reporters. Just like, you know, are you sure you're making the right decision? We've got Memorial Day barbecues. We have, you know, graduations. Are you sure? And she just, Dr. Wright said, put a mask on if you're older or have a comorbidity, you should not participate.
When is the election in November?
You should stay home.
When is the election in November? November something?
Yeah,
the
November.
Next day they're gonna lock us down.
Pat in Lockport, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I got a quick question for you guys this morning. How many of those cases of COVID have been vaxxed and boosted?
Boom.
Well, that's a good question.
That would be an interesting statistic. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, isn't the summer of joy going to be delightful? So we're going to have a bunch of flippant idiots in 90-degree heat walking around, breathing in their own crap, or they're going to get blasted with a gun.
Yeah.
Well, my God, you can't get any more joyful than that. And you know what they can do with the mask, but, you know, the sun doesn't shine there. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. They didn't know how many of the vaccinated.
Yeah.
So we're getting an average 1,000 cases a day in Chicago of people who have COVID.
But can't they tell
that? Hospitalizations are less than 10%.
Don't they have that number, that data? They just don't want to release it? Is that what?
Well, all she knows is that people that have been, because when they report cases, I don't know if they report their vaccination status, but people that are in the hospital,
yeah.
She said they're doing better if they're vaccinated, that the unvaxxed are the ones that, you know, are in the ventilators.
Almost 3 years into this.
But I don't believe anything anybody's saying anymore.
Yeah, we have better tools to fight this now.
We do.
We know how it affects people. We know who are the people that are affected the most. So you know what? Put those plans into place and leave everybody else the hell alone.
Matt in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wish to track the data relative to bacterial pneumonia and simple respiratory infections that are caused by these nasty masks. There's more people getting sick from that, including myself, than COVID. So that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, Matt. I hear you. When this first started and I was the original COVIDian, I had to get a chest x-ray because I had pneumonia. I had bacterial pneumonia from where? Stop it. Why are you laughing? I had bacterial pneumonia from wearing a mask, and I got the chest x-ray and everything, and the doctor at Northwestern said, I'm seeing so much of this because we were just throwing our masks in bowls and then picking them up. And but we have a COVIDian flashback that Justin is... Justin, you want to introduce this and play it? Because Justin was with me. I'm surprised we're still friends after this whole COVID debacle. You can take it from there, Justin, if you want.
I just want to relive all these moments that in the moment I was just rolling my eyes, annoyed. I want to relive all these now that we're looking at it with a sane angle. And so now I've gone back and I'm pulling all these great COVID memories. Of Amy's moments.
Okay, the first one, where what day was this? Or month, year? Was this 2020?
This was in 2020. This is January of 2020.
So I ordered masks for everybody here. And I'm stockpiling in my basement food. Because, you know, my friend Sue lived in Wuhan, China for a year. And she said it's a state of war over there. There is no food on the shelves. It's a state of panic. Everything is made in China, folks, and they are not going to work. Everything is going to shut down, and I'm just being prepared. I'm going to cash out some stocks, stockpiling food and other things, and getting masks, like the real masks, the ones that you wear to ward off tuberculosis, the army masks. I ordered that on Amazon, and you guys should, too, before they run out. I'm telling you. I know. I my family thinks that I'm insane.
Well, they're right.
Pretty much.
I mean, you're not just insane. You're not being careful. You're being hysterical.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, it's your right to do that.
Good call, Dan.
Justin, take us to clip number two.
Number two was a momentous day in COVID history. That was the first day Amy decided she was going to wear gloves around the office.
You guys all laugh at me, and people laugh at me when I coach with a mask on.
You're wearing plastic gloves right now.
Well, yeah, because
surgical gloves.
No one is taking the precautions that I am, and you have been coughing. Sometimes you cough. You don't cover your mouth.
You know why?
You rub your eyes, and your face, and then
coronavirus.
You touch the doorknob. So I'm just protecting myself. I'm putting plastic gloves on, and I have a box here of plastic gloves that I'm going to use until I feel that it's safe.
Yeah.
I got a box.
Oh. Justin, what's the third one?
That's another one?
And the third clip comes from when Amy returned from a trip on February 4th of 2020. She was at O'Hare Airport wearing gloves, wearing a mask, but not just gloves and a mask.
I was at O'Hare last night in the international terminal, and you would be surprised at how many people have masks on and gloves. I had two pairs of gloves on. I had a mask.
Two pairs.
Two, yeah, because one's not enough.
Like the latex gloves you're wearing now.
Well, I ran out of the box that our HR director gave me here, and there's some in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, God.
If you ever need to know if you want some gloves.
I need to see that. I need to see those clips now.
Justin has video. Tell him what you have video of.
So back in February when she was on this glove kick, one day I look over at the camera we have on the studio, and she is hand sanitizing her gloves.
Oh, God.
Amy, that's no way. You really were a COVIDian.
And I bought a Tyvek suit.
You bought a suit? Did you come in here with wearing it?
I have one. And I still have it. I gave another one to my neighbor.
That would have been gold if you came in with it wearing it.
I made Eric put up plexiglass, that stupid fish tank stuff. And then I had him get an extended audio cable because Dan was spitting when he was talking, and I was convinced that Dan had COVID.
Oh my God.
So I had Eric give me an extended cord, so I did the show again.
Oh my God.
And then when we shut down and everything, and then people were at work, I was, Debbie, there's no one's respecting this order to stay home. We only had 5 or 6 people here.
What shifted you out of that mindset?
Getting the hell out of here.
Oh.
Getting out of here, listening to this show. Obviously, every day we listen to different people. And then when I was in Utah, so I'd listen to Pritzker because, you know, they couldn't let people in the press conference. So I'd watch it virtually and ask questions via Zoom. And then listening to Herbert Cox Governor Herbert, the new governor's Governor Cox. And he was so calm and cool and just gave power to the people. Like, you know, you're adults.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can make your own decision. If you want to go out, you can go out. If you want to, you know, go to a restaurant, you go to a restaurant. And they literally, when they shut down for 2 weeks, they literally were shut down for 2 weeks. And that was it.
God, I can't believe it.
Oh, sorry.
You were putting hand sanitizer on not one, but 2 pairs of gloves. Good Lord. And Justin, that's one correction. You said glove. You mean gloves.
Oh, right. Yeah. That might have been during the double glove phase. There's phases of this. The hallway phase.
The hallway phase. Oh. The plexiglass phase.
And then I bought footies.
I bought footies. Oh, my God. Jeff in Lincolnshire. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going back to the comment about the numbers of people who are testing positive versus the inoculations. And I work in a hospital.
Uh-huh.
We are all totally not, you know, vaccinated with 2 boosters each. 4 guys in their department, 3 came down with COVID. See? I was the only guy there for a week and a half.
See? Uh-huh.
And one guy came into work the following day, and he actually tested negative and was sent home. He had 0 symptoms, and the other 2 guys had, a mild cold, and the other guy was sick. So it was the wide range of everything. And I just sat there for a week and a half thinking, I can't get it. I'm the only one here. But we were all quadruple shot it up, or whatever you want to call it. And they all came down with it.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Whatever it is called now, I don't know.
All right, Tim in Woodstock, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Quickly.
Hi, good morning, Amy. Good morning, Dan. Hey, when did we hear them telling us just for a short time, cooperate with us, please?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was 3 years ago.
Everything was going to be back to normal. So I'm sure Dr. Rorty is, you know, has the same intentions. But, I just think people like Dr. Awardi are having a hard time letting go of the meaning that this all imparts to them to be a health czar. And they just can't let it go. They just can't let it go.
Because it's given them fame and fortune and celebrity status.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Friday morning. Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony in for Dan Proft.
Hey.
Good morning. And big question yesterday, why did it take police over an hour to enter the classrooms to stop the bloodshed in Uvalde, Texas? And I don't know if you saw this video. It is gut-wrenching.
I did.
The parents who are standing outside with cops wondering, why aren't you inside the classroom?
Yeah.
They're throwing a dad to the ground here. And this mom is screaming, I'm with the mom. I'm over with her. So you get the picture, but they threw one dad down, handcuffed him.
Yeah.
Another mom, they were pepper spraying parents because they wanted to get in because they waited outside. The shooting happened. He shot his grandmother. He arrived at the school, he crashed his truck at 11:30, and 12 minutes later, he got into the building. The door was unlocked. There was no armed safety officer or even a safety officer, unlike what was said 2 days before. Remember, Sheriff McGraw?
There was a brave Consolidated Independent School District resource officer that approached him, engaged him, and at that time, there was not gunfire was not exchanged.
And now that's not true. Now they're changing their tune, saying there was no school resource officer.
Was there a school officer on campus, and was that school officer armed? Because that's what we've been told.
So at this time,
no. There was not an officer readily available, armed. No.
Was there an officer?
No.
Why?
Nothing. I can't answer that yet. I'll circle back with you.
There's a 12-minute gap from when he crashes his truck to when he enters the school. 12 minutes. What happened in that 12 minutes?
You got to understand, 11:30 is the information we have at this point. We got a crash and a man with a gun. And then you have responding officers. That's the information we have right now.
And they went in, the gunman, and we're not saying his name, went in, and he had the, 554 rounds of ammo with him.
Yeah.
What was double of what a soldier would take into combat.
Wow.
We need specialty equipment. We need body armor. We need precision riflemen, negotiators. They're also evacuating personnel, students, teachers.
And the two officers that went in were shot at right away, and then they claim that the officers that were responding, trying to go into the school, were being shot at through the walls of the school. But there's one thing that one officer said to Bruce Wolf, not Bruce Wolf.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. Wolf Blitzer, yesterday, that really bothers me, and I'm sure it bothers a lot of parents, not only in Texas, but around the country.
If they proceeded any further, not knowing where this suspect was at, they could have been shot. They could have been killed. And at that point, that gunman would have the opportunity to kill other people inside that school. So they were able to contain that gunman inside that classroom so that he was not able to go to any other portions of the school to commit any other killings.
So they didn't go after him because they could have been shot? Isn't that what, as an officer, you sign up for that?
I would love to see what their responding off, because different police departments have different.
Different rules of engagement. You mean?
I was a trained hostage crisis negotiator.
Okay.
So I heard also somewhere they thought they had a hostage situation. You know, so that's another thing. So that plays into the mind of probably why they didn't go in right away. But that 12 minutes.
The 12 minutes from when his car crashed to get, like, they let him get into the school.
Yeah.
Those officers, unless we're missing something.
Yeah, something's missing, because that 12 minutes, that's a lot of time. Where were they responding for? Uvalde has their own police department. So where were those police officers?
A 911 call was made because he shot his 66-year-old grandma. Then he stole his grandmother's black pickup truck and texted or Facebooked on the way saying, "I just killed my grandma. Now I'm going to go to school."
Do they say how far from where he shot his grandmother to the school? How far in location is that? Because I'm sure they were.
I don't know. I'm sure responding it's a small officers, town, but
the first place they responded to was the grandmother. So
right. So
that's where
but then they went
were.
On a pursuit.
Right.
They claim that's allegedly. I mean, everything's been changing. And then he crashed his car in Arroyo, or a ditch, as you guys call it, and then ran into the school.
Yeah.
With one of his AK-15s.
The
other
was
one
the school
was
the original
dropped.
Intent. Was that an original? Was that in? Was that one of his targets, or that became a target?
I don't. That's became. You know? Well, he put a Facebook. You know, I killed my grandma. Next, I'm headed to a school. With more on this, let's welcome to the program Randy Clark. He's a 32-year veteran with the Border Patrol agent, and now works for Breitbart News. Good morning, Randy. How are you?
Good morning, Amy. How are y'all today?
Good morning.
Good. I mean, we're days after this, and it's still a fluid situation about what happened and who was where. But what did the Border Patrol agents do to finally stop this madman?
Well, you know, I've heard some of the comments that you all have said right now, and you know, you're exactly right. This is fluid. You have multiple agencies that are trying to investigate this. Facts are changing. There are a lot of things I do know to be the case because I've got some very close associates. In fact, this BORTAC team that went in, the members on it, they were in my chain of command. I was in charge of all the Border Patrol stations in that one particular region. So I know many of the officers involved. I think there's going to be a great length of time to go over the points of failure on this. And some of the things, like John mentioned, you know, the hostage situation, there are a lot of things that, we have to put ourselves in an imaginary role. Can we only imagine what was there? And that's harder based upon our experiences. And so what we do know, one question was how close was the house? The house was relatively close to the elementary school in the same neighborhood, probably less than a mile, mile and a half max. Uvalde is a very small community, 60 miles from the border. That school district's been on lockdown in October of last year. In a few month period, had been on lockdown for 48 different occasions. There are high-speed chases that go through there involving migrant smuggling. So this is an exercise that teachers know very well, because people bail out of those vehicles and run around the campus or through the campus. So in many cases, these are resolved without anybody getting hurt, because, you know, it's a separate cause. It's still cause for concern. That same mayor has come out publicly in meetings talking about how many times these schools have been on lockdown because of the proximity to the border and the law enforcement chases. So Uvalde sits 80 miles from San Antonio, the next largest city, over an hour and a half away. Very small department, very little funding. And for them, a shooting is a big deal. So when the grandmother was shot, that all the resources are going to start heading that way, how few there are. And of course, they're going to call for backup. So there's nobody, I can tell you, that day, whether they were responding or not, that believed an active shooter was going to get in a classroom, lock himself in behind a solid fireproof door, and begin shooting children and teachers. They're responding not knowing what they're responding to. They don't carry tactical equipment. Most officers in a rural setting, they are not SWAT officers. They don't have ballistic helmets. They've got probably a handgun on, and so they don't know what they're doing. The schools are hard to get in because they lock down. In most campuses, there's only a few people that have keys to get in once those doors are locked, and most of them are inside the locked doors. There was a point of failure there, obviously. This shooter was allowed to get into that building, and it may have been a momentary lapse of somebody just propping open a door or forgetting to check that it was locked, and that's where this started. So I think we're going to find, like every catastrophe, it's the perfect storm, and it's a series of systematic failures. So the policy was there to lock these doors, but obviously something went wrong.
Yeah, because you can see video of him. He's all in black, and you can see him walking into the door. He was no struggle at all, just opened it up. And the Border Patrol agent who shot him, you're right, had to go get a room key from the principal's office to get that door open. And there was a girl in there, according to MSNBC, who bled out. Like, if they had gotten in there earlier, they could have helped her. So the border
patrol, now I was on, the phone with several sources that were responding at the same time. And the minute they advised that the suspect was down, you could hear the screams from the officers, you know, crying and screaming, because they were looking at all these children, many of whom were alive. You know, there were, remember, there were 17 that were taken to hospitals. So he did not kill everybody in the classroom. He practically wounded everyone. There was very few that did not suffer. And so they're witnessing this and calling for tourniquets. They did not believe that that's what he was doing. They just couldn't fathom it. The problem with having him barricaded is, we've changed the way we train for active shooters. Yep. Initially, the thought and the tactical process was wait for a hostage negotiator, wait for an organized team. And those teams were coming because you don't know how long this is going to go on. Yeah. They were coming, but they never got there.
Well, he didn't want to negotiate. I mean, when they hear rapid fire, do we move on to the next?
You want one. If he begins to want to negotiate and makes a cell phone call, you obviously want somebody trained there.
Right.
So while this hour was elapsing, and please, I do not want to make excuses. There's nothing going to bring these children back. And I was at the scene yesterday at Robb Elementary. I was at the memorial, and these people in the community, they are absolutely heartbroken, including these officers. It's just a horrendous situation. There's no good point of it, hardly, except, some of the I guess the communities coming together for each other is probably the only positive light you can put on this, is that they're close-knit and they care for each other, but they are hurting, and there's nothing that's going to make a parent happy.
Yeah. And there's cousins, like cousins lost cousins. You'd lose your child, but you also lost your niece or nephew. I mean, there's multiple cousins in classroom. And we originally heard that he had gotten into one classroom and then barricaded himself in, but now there's reports that he was in four different classrooms. And that the last classroom is the one that he barricaded himself. And the Border Patrol agent who shot him, he was shot at as well. And he sustained a gunshot wound to the head. People don't know about that.
Yes. And if you look at that Border Patrol agent, you know, there are some pictures floating around the internet. And I can tell you that is one of the Border Patrol agents that went in. He's wearing a baseball cap that would be akin to what you'd wear on a fishing trip. He didn't wait for personal protective equipment. That's personal protective equipment. He's not worried about his person. They're trained to successfully end something. And everyone needs to remember there's 600 friendly fire children targets in that building.
Yeah.
So it's not an old Western gunfight where you stand willingly and I stand and nothing in between us. You can't return gunfire unless can see the suspect and not hit a child.
Yeah.
So if we could go back in time and tell these cops, just find the key, get in there, and even if half of you die, open the door and start shooting. And then we find out these children died from friendly gunfire, we would have the same outrage.
That's true.
You know, this was almost a lose-lose for the officers. And I spoke to one law enforcement leader who, you know, he was in tears yesterday because he knows some of the officers there. And one was standing under the windows, but the windows are not like a house window.
Right.
They're above head height, and they're very narrow. And we understand that he had pulled down the blinds. His child was in there, and he can't get in.
Wow.
And the child died. The child died.
Randy,
so the advantage, yes, sir.
What? My question. I'm a former police officer myself, former trained hostage crisis negotiator. What the responding officers? What? Because that 12 minutes, I get it. They understaffed, didn't have the resources. But what was it about that 12 minutes? That's one question. And then the second one. Do you think it's time to start having that conversation about arming teachers or having somebody within, not just the school resource officer, but somebody within there, within these schools, to be armed to take out somebody, a threat that's in that room with those kids? Could that become a national conversation, you think?
Well, sadly, I think there has to be some adult conversations. You know, they should have happened after Sandy Hook. Some did. That's available to some districts. You know, they can get the training for that. Some choose to, some choose not to, and they don't advertise in many cases when they do choose that. But I will tell you another thing that we need to analyze is that I know for a fact in our school districts and in many where you have limited school resource armed officers, they tend to focus on the higher grades.
Right.
Because you're going to have the threat of somebody bringing in a gun to the high school where you have 16, 17, 18-year-old students, and then the next, you know, area of focus is the middle school,
right,
where you have larger and older children, and fights can get, you know, bloody, and people can get injured. So you tend to put your resources there, and then the elementary schools outnumber all of the secondary ones.
That's true.
So they're left the least protected. So that's a conversation that needs to happen as well. And I think that's what the community, those that I spoke with yesterday, they're hurting. They have, you know, relatives that were part of this or went to the school. Many of these children don't want to return to school.
Yeah. Oh, heck
no. You know,
no.
The 600
yesterday was
that
supposed
survived
to be their last day of school. Yeah. Sorry. The 600,
you know, so
that survived, what are they going to do?
Yeah, this will have long-term effects. And the message that I received in general is our community needs to heal, and we also need to have that conversation of how can we? And just, you know, like John said, being a law enforcement officer, we understand the tactical advantages always goes to the guy who plans or the shooter who plans.
Because we were actually,
and in this case, who could imagine somebody that's going to go to the local elementary in their neighborhood with two AR-15 rifles, over 500 rounds of ammunition and backpacks? This was planned before the weapons were bought.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. The weapons were not bought for anything else than a mass shooting. So he chose the time, he chose the place. And when he got there during those 12 minutes, a funeral home director next door thought there was a crash, which there was, but he didn't think it was a shooter. They received fire at the funeral home.
Right. He
so
fired two shots at them first.
Oh, wow.
People that were outside the funeral
correct
home.
So that's probably the next 911 call. Is it okay? There's shots fired at the funeral home. So these police officers are saying, well, we got to get this woman out of this house because she's shot in the face. Okay, wait a minute. Now he's at the funeral home. So they were not privy to those Facebook messages that forecast this as it's happening. You know, right. Obviously police don't monitor Facebook for every individual in their town. So the things that we learn after, it just makes it all the more tragic when we just wish that maybe if there was an armed officer there, he could have encountered him face to face where they had the tactical, you know, ability to take that target out. Well, once he disappears into the classroom, you know, we've done this training, which has been suspended because of COVID.
Yeah.
You've seen news articles out there that talk about 2020 having training. Yeah. Well, these officers and these school employees haven't done mass training in mass because of the pandemic. So that's a failure, too.
Yeah, big time.
You know, there will be multiple points, and I know we're all going to be disappointed, but I'll guarantee you there are security lapses at schools near you where somebody props the door open because I'm just going to go get something from the car. I don't want to have to buzz in.
Right.
Well, this was the perfect storm where that minor lapse may have been what started this tragedy, and there may have been more.
Yeah, and Randy, speak to the – because you have a lot of people who are upset that officers were taking parents down because the parents wanted to rush into the school.
Oh, they're pepper spraying them and handcuffing them.
But there's a reason why – because you don't want to – you can't – as an officer, you can't put – those parents in the line of fire.
Right, because he was shooting at one point in time. He was shooting from inside the school, outside a window.
Speak to why that's why cops do that, and you know, to make sure that these parents don't run into the school and they become a victim as well.
So, and one thing we have to picture too is those officers. There were a lot of things happening during that 1 hour that I know to be fact. They were summoning air ambulances just in case. They were putting all the EMS resources. Calling hostage negotiators, area SWAT teams, because they didn't know how long it was going to last. And so if you have 600 children, how many parents and relatives do you have?
Yeah.
So you're going to have 1,000 people coming. If you just, I know the parents would rush because I would want to do the same thing.
I
know you all would do the same thing as well. And you wouldn't care if you got shot.
Exactly. That's what one dad said. One dad said, I don't care if I die, I'm going in there right now. And then boom, they took him down.
Absolutely. But now add another 1,000 potential victims in there. Yep. You will never fire one shot.
Yep.
They'll be clawing at that door, but they still wouldn't have been able to get into that classroom door. It was locked. It's a solid door. That's the best. You know, when they say he's barricaded, generally when they say a suspect is barricaded, it usually means he's behind a locked door.
Right.
A closed door that you can't get into.
And they renovated that school a few years ago, so they put in the big, solid, you know, heavy metal doors on the outside and in each classroom.
So, yes, you would have just put 1,000 parents into the hallways.
Yeah.
Now who's the shooter? They don't have a picture of the shooter. The cops do not know what he looks like. You've got to sort that out in short order.
Yep.
All right, you're changing my mind on that. Fine. It's just so heart-wrenching. All right, Randy Clark, former Border Patrol agent for 32 years. Prior to his retirement, he served as the division chief for law enforcement operations, directing operations for 9 Border Patrol stations within the Del Rio, Texas sector. Such a pleasure to have you on, and thank you so much for the information and for all the work you do.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Amy.
Thank you.
Thank you. He also works for Breitbart News Texas, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
All right, before we get to our next guest, I just want everyone to hear this. This is a fourth grader who survived the shooting in Uvalde. It wasn't Lester Holt interviewing him, as this is actually the mom and dad invited Ken, a reporter from Ken's TV. That's the CBS affiliate in San Antonio.
Nice.
Yes, I applied there. Yes, I was going to work there at one point in time in my life, but I did not. I think it's a respectable station. And they talked to this fourth grader about what he did to survive and how, well, just hear for yourself.
He shot our next person's door, and then we have a door in the middle, and he opened it, and then he came in, and he crouched a little bit, and he said, it's time to die. When he shot, it was very loud, and it hurt my ear. When I saw the bullets on the floor, it was real. And when I heard the shooting through the door, I told my friend to hide under something so he won't find us. I was hiding hard, and I was telling my friend to not talk because he's going to hear us. The cop said, help if you need help. And then one of the persons in my class said, help. The guy overheard, and he came in and shot her. And then the cops barged in into that classroom, and the guy shot the cops, and the cops just started shooting at.
So let's review. He said, the guy came in, meaning the gunman, and said, it's time to die. Mm-hmm. And then when the cops were going through and looking for the gunman, they were saying, does anybody yell if you need help? And a girl, little girl, fourth grader, said help, and he was still in the room, and he shot her.
Yeah. See, I
she should have just been, you don't know you're in fourth grade.
Yeah, but I used to be a school resource officer. We actually used to teach them not to respond to those things because that's what they do. They'll yell, who needs help? Police here. Nope, don't, until you see a police officer.
So you're a school resource officer.
I was a school resource officer. And we actually
good information.
I trained them.
You train them. So if somebody yells, who needs help here?
Correct.
Even if they say, I'm the police, do you need help?
Don't say anything. Do not say anything because that's one of the tactics that the shooter uses so that he or she can draw out more people. So you just be silent. Don't say anything. My friend Jonathan T. Gilliam has a book called Sheep No More. Sheep No More. He actually, in this book, teaches people how to survive these type of incidents. And if you don't have that book, I'm shameless plug, but it's a very important
Sheep
book.
Sheep No More.
Sheep No More. I'm telling you, it will teach you, and you could. These are some things you can teach. Unfortunately, we have to teach our kids these things.
Well, I need to know because I took a class once, you know, when I was over at Blaine because we're trapped. Like, there's no exit. There's one exit in the back. So I had everything planned, and I told the kids, all right, if we ever hear gunshots from here, we're going out this door.
Yeah.
Or if they're coming up the stairs trying to get in, but that door was always locked. I always made sure that door was locked, that nobody could crawl up the fire escape. We're going to run this way, and, you know, and if worst comes to worst, we have these weights we're going to throw. I mean, that was just...
Yeah, it's
insane. It was crazy. Okay, back to this fourth grade, sweet little fourth grade boy who's just... They didn't show his face, which is good. We're not going to say his name because you don't need to know his name. But this... This is the information. This is, they're going to gather information from him.
Yeah. Just opened the curtain, and then I just put my hand out, and then I got out with my friends because I knew it was the police when I saw the armor and the shield.
See? He saw the armor and the shield. That's he and his friend, who he grabbed and put underneath a curtain.
Yeah. They were nice teachers, and they went in front of my classmates to help to save them.
So he was in the classroom where 19 students were killed and where his two teachers were killed. Mm. And he saw the teachers try to shield their students from the gunman.
I would like to say for every kid and parents to be safe.
That's what his message was, because the reporter said, do you have a message for everyone? I was like, I just want everybody to be safe. And police are going to be interviewing him, obviously, and the feds too, because he was one of the surviving. He and his friends were one of the survivors in that classroom. And again, 17 others were injured. Yeah. All expected to make it, but 19
scarred
dead.
For life,
he brought enough rounds for war.
Yeah,
556 rounds of ammo.
Yeah,
all in those extended magazines, which I hate those things. And I'm a gun owner. I can't stand those. And people hate me. Why would you? Why? Yeah. Why do you need one?
Because
if you're law enforcement, I understand.
Yeah,
but a regular citizen, if you can't shoot Bambi or whatever you're trying to shoot in one 6-magazine round,
that's not what the Second Amendment is for. Second Amendment isn't for hunting. You know what it's for?
Protecting your property.
It's to protect all other amendments. That's what the Second Amendment is for. The government wants to try tyranny to come in. I mean,
I want to be able to. Okay, my friend Steve tackled Jared Loeffner while he was changing his magazines.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, but if he had an extended one, he could have kept shooting and killing more people.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate. But guess what?
Why do you need it? Just tell me why. No, I know about the Second Amendment. But tell me why you personally think that you need an extended clip.
I just said why. Because to defend all the rest of the amendments. To defend the Constitution. Now, I get it. A lot of people may not like that, may not understand that. But you know what? I mean, these idiot, evil people that are out there, they use it for evil.
Right, and they modify their assault rifles to, you know, shoot off more rounds. They do, you know, that's what happened when in Buffalo.
I take a principled stand on the Second Amendment. And yeah, I mean,
we're going to agree to disagree on that.
I'll take a principal
stand
on the
second amendment. For the end of time, I'm going to agree to disagree. All right, so the political battle is heating up over what can be done to prevent this kind of tragedy. Democrats want extended background checks from 3 to 10 days. And they have the government to have the ability to confiscate firearms from dangerous people. Here's Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut.
We are not prepared to allow the gun lobby and the gun industry to continue to run this town and this place.
Ted Cruz responded, good senator from Texas.
If you want to stop,
he's being interviewed by Sky News.
Yeah. The proposals the Democrats have, none of them would have stopped this.
But why does this only happen in your country? I really think that's what many people around the world just, they cannot fathom. Why only in America? Why is this American exceptionalism so awful?
You know, I'm sorry you think American exceptionalism is awful.
Mm. Wow.
And they have the NRA conference today. It's in Houston. It's been planned for 2 years. Senator Cruz is going to be speaking. President Trump's going to be speaking. Governor Greg Abbott has rescinded his invitation. He's not going to be speaking, you know, out of respect for those who lost their lives.
See, I think you should go
Lee
there.
Lee Greenwood
even the more.
Was supposed to sing. He's not singing.
Go there even the more now.
The man who sings American Pie, what's his name? American Pie. He is declined. He's Miss American. Justin, can you help me? That gentleman, he is not going to be singing out of respect for those who have lost their lives. And would you still go? Or are you?
I would go.
Yeah.
Yes, I would.
All right.
Yes, I would. Amy, I'm telling you, the Second Amendment, I'm telling you, it is the most important amendment we have in this country.
More so than the First Amendment?
It's guess what? There's
freedom
no
of
first,
movement, freedom of expression.
There's no First Amendment without the Second Amendment. There is absolutely no First Amendment without the Second Amendment. We get, and this is why they're after it so much, because they know they get rid of the Second Amendment, they'll be able to do whatever the heck they want. For me, the Second Amendment is put in place to keep government at bay. That's how our founders framed the Second Amendment. That's why it shall not be infringed at all.
All right. Well, let's see. One man who wants to become a lawmaker, Michael Rebrich. He's the owner and operator of Amazon Logistics and congressional candidate for Illinois 16th District. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, you bum.
I have to agree with you 100%. The Second Amendment is absolute. It protects all the other amendments. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. You know, there are millions of NRA members that have never committed mass murders. So, you know, the tool is just a tool.
Yeah.
It takes the hands of a madman to make the tool do the evil. The tool isn't the evil. The madman is.
Right.
And well, by the way,
what do you think should be
God
done?
God bless that 10-year-old boy who was able to articulate so well for all of us what happened. My 10-year-old son couldn't do that without going on all sorts of different tangents. So God bless that young little boy. I imagine he's going to grow up to be the next John Anthony. he's that good at it.
Oh, God, hope
or mayor of the town or work for law enforcement, that's for sure.
You know, and he certainly knew what he was supposed to do. And God bless his parents for having helped teach him those lessons.
Yeah. All right. So if you're you got a big fight on your hands in this primary, which is coming up, what, 5 weeks now? How much time do we have?
5 weeks. Five.
Whew, it's going to fly by. Fastest 4 to 5 weeks of your life. You've got Mr. LaHood there that you're competing against. And how do you differ from that candidate?
You know, I think you have to look at it initially just on the votes that he's taken. He voted in favor of H.R. 550, which is the government immunization database that threatens everyone's medical privacy, potentially doing a whole host of other things that would infringe upon our rights, if you don't have your vaccine, you can't bank, you can't renew your driver's license. I mean, there's all sorts of dangerous undertones that come with H.R. 550. And he voted in favor of that. That's a Democrat bill 100%. And then you look at some of the other decisions he made. He voted against H.R. 7790, which was the $28 million, not billion, the $28 million for emergency baby food shortage funding. He voted against that. And then, of course, he voted in favor of $40 billion to Ukraine. He'll probably do it again when Biden asks for another $50 million next week. You know, when we have problems on our own southern border and have an inability to define our sovereignty, it's more important to send money over to Ukraine. I'm sorry, these are really bad decisions. He may be a conservative voter most of the time, but these three things that I just talked about, these are things that directly affect the individual's rights to freedom, liberty, to be free of tyranny. I mean, I'm sorry, this guy doesn't represent any of the conservative values that I think the rest of the 16th district holds.
Yeah. And
when you're in the 16th district, right?
I'm in the 14th.
Oh, excuse me.
That's correct.
Yeah. Excuse
I'm
me.
In the 14th.
<La-di-da-da-da>.
Michael, when you first ran, you were running it, you know, initially it was the 16th with Adam Kinzinger's district.
Correct.
What are you hearing out there in this newly drawn 16th? Because now, no, I mean, I think 70 million people lined up to run against Kinzinger when it was initially. What's the differences in that you're hearing from the districts now?
I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
As far as the difference of the districts, because the 16th initially, the old 16th went from the Wisconsin to the Indiana border. What are the issues that are affecting those people in the newly drawn 16th district?
Well, the newly drawn 16th is predominantly a rural community, so you're dealing with a lot of farms and agriculture. I think the highest population within the district, like condensed population, is in Morris, somewhere around 15,000 to 20,000 people.
Wow.
But the district, it skirts around Bloomington Normal, it skirts around Peoria, it skirts around Rockford. It's really poorly drawn, and so Morris to me is where the battleground is. That's different than what the 16th was, as you noted, that shot all the way over to Indiana and had a lot of Will County in it and all those great folks in Will County. The challenge is, you know, how certainly for me it would take me 6 hours to go from one end of the district to the other.
Wow.
That's a lot of ground to cover, and the ability to meet people in between is, you know, pretty far spaced out.
Wow. So when you're meeting people and going to these smaller towns, what is their biggest concern? Is it inflation? Is it safety? Is it gun violence? What is it?
Well, I think without a doubt it's inflation. That's affecting everybody. You know, I'm a truck driver for a living over the road, and you know, the cost of fuel for me, I'm not going to eat all of that. That's going to get passed on to the manufacturer or the shipper, and that's going to ultimately end up on the consumer. There's already a shortage of truckers out there. You know, the rural communities that the district 16th district deals with, you're dealing with a lot of fertilizer issues. Well, if you can't get the trucks to deliver the fertilizer, then they're not going to be able to grow their crops or give their animals food or supplements. I think these are the real concerns is the inflation and the energy supply. You know, we got a serious issue on our hands coming up with regards to death for diesels. That's the diesel exhaust fluid. It was a government mandate here, I think sometime early 2000s, maybe 2010, where diesel exhaust fluid had to be used in every truck built after that. Wow. And basically what that does is it changes the black smoke coming out of the smokestacks to clear, so that you know, when you see a truck driving down the road, you don't feel as though it's contributing to climate change. That's really all it does. It's mostly water. But the thing about death is we don't produce that here. We don't produce the base components here. It's basically a fertilizer. Guess where the number one export of that fertilizer is that
China.
We use to make the death to power our trucks? No, China is number three. Russia is number one.
Oh, okay.
Qatar is number two. China and Egypt are tied for third. India has a great, huge supply of this material that's used to make the death, but they use most of it for themselves. They don't export it anyway. So you've got all these countries that we're at odds with that are either stopping their export of these fertilizers, which we know is happening, or it's getting tied up in docks. Well, I'm telling you right now, if the trucks can't get the death fuel for their vehicles to be able to deliver their things, they're not going to be able to drive. If trucks can't drive, you're not going to get food. You're not going to get any of the products that you buy. Manufacturers aren't going to get any of the raw materials that they need. This is a serious, serious problem. And guys like Darren LaHood, now he's going to take his $4.2 million campaign cash because he's a longtime congressman, and he's going to go down to Peoria and buy gas for his constituents at half the price of what it would be otherwise. He just did this the other day with
Willie Wilson, huh? He pulled a Willie.
He pulled a Willie. Now, why is Darren going out there and playing the Willie game buying tanks of gas when what he should be concerned about is the fact that if we don't have death for our trucks, this whole country's in a big world of hurt.
All right, Michael, we're going to have to leave it there. Where can people find out more information about you and your campaign and maybe give you a few coins?
Sure, appreciate that. Rebreshforcongress.org is the website. You can find me on Facebook, Mike Rebresh for Congress. I drive a truck for a living, so for the next 4 weeks, I'm going to be driving in and around the district with my flatbed trailer and all my flags. And hopefully, if you see me, wave me, I'll stop and pull over and talk to you because I don't have that kind of money. And that's the best I can do, so that's what we're going to do.
Maybe you'll be like Edward Durr, who won the state Senate seat. He was a trucker in New Jersey.
Stranger things have happened.
All right. Thank you, Michael Rebresh. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Friday morning. Phone lines are open. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. You know what? I forgot about the text line. I gotta log on to that text line. Amy Jacobson here. John Anthony from Black is Right Radio here on AM 560. Saturdays from noon to 3 p.m. Who's on your show this weekend?
But we're not doing a show the holiday weekend.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So is it, as we call it, a best of?
It's going to be a best of.
Oh, do you get involved in your best ofs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you decide?
I help pick it.
All right. Good, good, good.
Hoff Daddy does a good job of it, though.
Who does?
George. I call him Hoff Daddy.
Hoff Daddy?
Hoff Daddy.
I call him the cat crazy man because Justin and I once went to his farm.
I know. He told me.
To get a cat. How did that end, Justin? Because my feral cat died and I only have one in my cat colony and I need more feral cats. Yeah,
and we tried to catch the cat, and I ended up slamming my head on his metal patio table, trying to catch Snickers or cookies or Butterfinger.
17,000 cats he has there.
Oh, that he knows of.
Yeah, that's
only a portion of what he's got going on. There's a lot of inbreeding going there.
I was there last weekend, and they're still hunting and running around. And
could you pet any of them?
Oh no.
What about that one? Was it Angel? Who was the friendly one?
He got rid of the one that I wanted.
Where did he go? What do you mean he got rid of it?
They're capturing them now.
And doing what?
And
making cat soup?
Something George would do. No, but they're sending them away to Des Plaines. They got a place out there. I guess some lady has a property and I don't know.
Do they understand that when you have two cats, by the end of the year, you're going to have 70 from those two cats alone? He doesn't listen to me. Why do men not listen to me? I am the cat lady.
And there are 12 plus there at least now, I think he said.
Oh, sure. That's a bunch of, you know what.
Well, 12 he knows of.
So is Snickers still there? Oh, this is so inside baseball right now. But
Pumpkin was the one I wanted. Little small orange kitten.
Yeah.
Totally adorable. Wouldn't let me take him because Garfield. His daughter wanted Pumpkin. And then
Daddy, I want Pumpkin.
Pumpkin is now in Des Plaines living his best life.
Oh, my God. Poor man's Mount Prospect. Hey, that's what I grew up in Mount Prospect, so I can say that. All right, folks. Well, the election is 32 days away. We did the math for you.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get, first of all, the debate, because we had one at Channel 5. I thought Marianne Ahern did an amazing job.
Yeah.
She pedaled to the metal. She did not let down at all.
Yeah.
Because three candidates. The two black candidates they put together on
Solomon.
Channel 5, Solomon and Phil Shimp. Solomon, Irvin, and Shimp. Yes. And then at WGN, you had Jesse Sullivan, Darren Bailey, and Gary Rabine.
Moderated by two black people. Oh, go figure.
So do you have a point of contention with that?
Yeah. I mean, two of the most smug leftists, and you're going to, the way they were asking the questions, the smug look they had, you know, and interjecting their, you know, part of their biases into the question.
Yeah, I'm like, Micah Mataire. I've worked with Micah Mataire in Detroit, and I love her too. I love everybody I worked with, but
yeah.
No, I did hear her one time when they were asking about BLM. She did get in there and just kind of, what's wrong with BLM?
Yeah.
Like, you just let them answer the question.
Right. Moderate.
And of course, everybody is taking, issue with BLM because Richard Ervin is BLM, supports BLM. And here's Jussie Sullivan.
Those who stand for Black Lives Matter, like Richard Ervin did, get called out on that. That he was someone who stood proudly and strongly for Black Lives Matter that's trying to disintegrate the family unit.
And Jussie Sullivan also on defunding police, because yet we have another weekend coming up, Memorial Day weekend. And you know what's going to happen. Hopefully this place won't go off.
Yeah.
But last Memorial Day weekend, I think we had more than 50 shootings and double-digit homicides. It doesn't stop. And it all started because of defund the police. Yeah.
Defund the police was the dumbest mantra I've ever heard in my life. And we see it play out right now because the arsonists who are shouting this have now become the firemen. They're going to put out the fire. They keep tracing back and back like, oh, never mind. We went too far with this. They realize now because it's election time, they are going to face the consequences of their decision to not support our police officers. And this is the way they defunded the police. No cash bail. What do you think these counties rely on to be able to support themselves? That's a way of defunding them. These unfunded mandates that they constantly have for our law enforcement. I am going to fight for our law enforcement, and we are going to work together with the Democrats to repeal this thing and say we have to get rid of this, because the other one they're trying to go with now is ending qualified immunity for our police officers. Yep. If you feel like we've seen an exodus from the police department now, just wait. And they're going to try to pass this stuff after election year. I will not let it happen when I'm governor.
And it's so bad in Chicago. I talked to Alderman Matt O'Shea's office yesterday because he's proposing a cash incentive for people to even apply to become Chicago police officers. And if they sign up and pass all the requirements, they'll get a cash bonus. In Elk Grove, there's a $10,000 cash bonus.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Suburban. Yeah, they want the finest officers.
Let me dust off my certification.
Oh, yeah, you can't get a signing bonus. But when I was talking to Alderman O'Shea's chief of staff, they used to fill up the United Center with Chicago police applicants. 25,000. Now, the last one that they held, 50. Less than that. And now it's so bad that they're letting them apply online.
Oh,
because that's how desperate the city is to get Chicago police officers. So when is it time to call in the National Guard? Jussie Sullivan says the time is now.
Been over to Afghanistan as an Army civilian, and we helped set up local police forces. We lost a lot of guys while we were over there because the people we were training kept turning their weapons back on us. And I have protect and serve at my absolute core. When it comes to working together with law enforcement and the National Guard to make sure that we don't care about political optics. This is what J.B. Pritzker said during that time of the riots. He said, I'm not going to send them in. What does it look like to have machine guns on the street corner? Well, people were losing their lives. And Mayor Lightfoot said, oh, we don't want the National Guard in. Well, it is your job as governor to not sit back and allow a mayor to treat it as if it is not the largest city in your state that you have an obligation to fix.
I thought Jussie Sullivan, that was his shining.
He won that debate.
Oh, hands down, he won the debate. What do you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. The biggest loser from the debate? Easily, Richard Ervin. He lied. He wants to keep the FOID card system in place. And a lot of the other candidates want to get rid of the FOID card.
So do I.
Pro-life, what are you? How are you feeling today?
Listen, I'm pro-life. But to comment on this leaked draft from the Supreme Court,
don't
that is
the
not
voters
the final
have
decision,
a right to know where you stand?
It's irresponsible for me to compromise. I'm a lawyer.
Wow. It's irresponsible, though, some would say, to not take a stand. Voters want to know where you stand.
The stand will happen once an actual draft comes
that
down.
That will but be let me, after the primary.
Let me tell you what I'm hearing as I drive throughout the state and talk to many voters, whether it be in Chicagoland, the suburbs, whether it be Central Illinois or Southern Illinois. They're upset about how J.B. Pritzker is being so extreme. We're talking about abortion.
Can you?
Wow.
Still liking Richard Ervin there?
Who? I never came out who I'm supporting. Never.
Did you sign that list?
What list?
Of the 60 state senators, state reps.
I'm not on that list.
We had Tim Butler on yesterday to talk about. He's got a legislation that he authored to get Kim Fox recalled.
Yeah.
And I'm like, on the way out, I'm like, you know what? Did you sign that that agreement to support Richard Irvin?
Say yes.
Oh, yeah. And I said, why? What is wrong with it? Yeah. And then I went off the list. You know, he wants to keep FOID cards in place. He's pro-BLM. Yeah. He's not committing on whether or not he's pro-life. The mask mandate. He fined businesses in Aurora that did not. And he said that he didn't. And real quick, this is him on the mask. Is it lie number four?
The state had a mask mandate. We did not have a mask mandate. The state
did.
Prisker had a mask mandate.
Well, you had one in Aurora
as
well.
We did.
There was a time when you encouraged businesses and said there would be fines if they didn't follow.
No, that was J.B. Pritzker's mandate. As a matter of fact, he put it on Aurora to give
you
to
warned
have a vaccine.
Businesses if customers were not wearing them, there would be fines.
As I said, you know,
yes, he did.
When
J.B.
Pritzker,
right.
You know, tried to force municipal.
You know what? I'm sick of that flim-flam, man. I was at a function with him, and he is a shucking, jiving all the way through, like, you know, uncomfortable in his own skin because it's all a lie.
Yeah.
Because he was in a room with Republicans, and he is not a Republican. Yeah. I don't care if anybody, he is not.
I will not be voting for him, though.
Okay, thank you.
But I will say this. Should he win, I will. Should he win the primary, I will. I cannot give J.B. Pritzker.
Well, let's just get to the primary first before we have that discussion.
Yeah.
You think you can? I sued the man.
Yeah.
And I won. And I should have sued him for monetary pain and suffering, but I didn't. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. Gary Rabine didn't really make any waves. He's just kind of there. Yeah. Sorry. And I love Gary. We all love Gary.
Yeah.
Darren Bailey, he kind of stepped in it a little, and people took him to task on social media for saying this.
And let's focus on the city of Chicago a minute. Let's just call it like it is. Let's think about Chicago, a crime-ridden, corrupt, dysfunctional hellhole.
Yeah, a little too harsh.
I think if he would have rephrased that.
True, but people, you always have to remember, that's people's homes.
But rephrase it, though. The leadership of Chicago. Now, that would have been a better.
Okay, if he said the leadership of Chicago has made Chicago
a hellhole. And then I would have made shirts. Hellhole.
I don't know. I'm warming up to Jesse Sullivan. Yeah. I can tell you that.
I like Jesse. I really do. I really like Jesse. I think people finally saw him and, you know, en masse, and they were able to see who he was, and he was able to articulate. He was the only one that actually made the distinction of Black Lives Matter. You know, meaning the group and the sentiment of Black Lives Mattering. He was the only one that did that. And I think they all bombed on the criminal justice reform issues.
Jesse Sullivan.
Except for Jesse.
Because he knew the facts.
Yeah. But they neither
and the
one
consequences
of
those decisions, too.
But still, neither one of them was able to define what critical race theory was. I think some people get sometimes confused critical race theory and the culturally responsive teachings confused.
Okay.
Because there's a.
Right. Well, you have to teach about slavery.
Correct.
You have to teach about the Holocaust. You have to teach about Japanese internment camps, which we didn't learn about, by the way.
Right.
I found that out later in life.
Yeah.
About that.
I learned about it.
Did you?
Yeah. I learned about it.
We didn't. Or maybe I was sick that day. I don't remember. Terry in Rogers Park, you are on Chicago's Morning Answer. Good morning.
Hi. I thought Jesse Sullivan was the most articulate, knowledgeable, and passionate about what's wrong with Chicago, Illinois. There's something special about him, and I think it's godliness.
Yeah, and he puts God first.
And his faith.
And I was talking to one Republican operative who said, well, you know, because he was getting feedback. He's one of those pollsters, and he said, well, Irvin bombed.
Yeah.
I mean, he dug himself in a hole. Because lying about the masks, the FOID car, where he stands on the pro-life issue. Again, pointing out the fact that he's not a Republican.
Yeah.
But he said Jesse Sullivan won that debate, but he's too godish. And I said, well, I'm on the God squad. What's wrong? You know, I take offense to that. Yeah. What is wrong with having God in your life?
Yeah.
Well, it's not who we are. And he mentions it. That's who he is.
Yeah.
He's not shying away from who he is.
Yes.
And I think he's genuine, and the conversations I've had with him.
It's refreshing.
Yeah.
He's a refreshing candidate. He really is.
And he really wants what's best for Illinois.
Yeah, I agree.
But so does Gary Rabine, too.
Well, I think everybody that's running.
Right.
You know,
but even Richard. Flyer, I am so sick of getting these flyers.
Hey,
I mean, this one now, he's got a chef hat on. Before, he had a bolo cap on.
Can I see those?
Oh, yeah. These are all.
No. I want to show you something.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see Stephanie Trussell while Avery Bourne was speaking? She was fanning herself with all these mailers at Avery Bourne while she was speaking. Savage.
Where was that?
Stephanie Trussell. It was somewhere downstate.
Oh, when they had
Avery Bourne was speaking. No, it was Avery Bourne was just speaking.
Just speaking. And, so, oh.
And Stephanie was just waving the mailers.
I mean, these things like tough on crime prosecutor.
Yeah.
It's all. I mean, that Darren Bailey supported Pritzker's lockdowns. That's what this one says. Darren Bailey sued Pritzker because of the lockdowns.
Correct.
These are just so. It's. Lie after lie after lie.
Yeah,
but I've never seen it so bad. And stop text messaging me, all of you.
I think what happens, though, I think what's going to happen is what happened to Jeannie Ives is going to happen in this election because of what they're doing the same. They're using the same tactics that they used on Jeannie Ives. And what happened? The Republican base didn't come out to vote for the eventual Republican nominee, Bruce Rauner. And they're doing the exact same thing. And I've made the plea on my radio show. Please stop the lies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those mailers, I get them. They're all complete lies.
And it's just, you know? Stop. You're wasting printing ink. Clay and Wheeling, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Amy. I didn't catch the other co-host name.
John.
Good morning as well.
John Anthony.
Good morning. John Anthony. You know what? As a 28-year-old male who has a $22,000 property tax already, who I already pay lawyers and other people. I pay a lawyer about $2,000 to knock my tax bill back down and keep it reasonable at $22,000. So how in good conscience can I vote for Bailey? Rabine?
Wait. Is it because of the commercial that says he voted to raise property taxes?
Yeah.
He did.
13 times?
Yeah.
Lie.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Lie?
Yeah, that's a lie.
That's a lie.
Okay. You know, I do kind of, I favor Bailey a little bit more, but, you know, Rabine, you know, gut-wise, you know, people always vote with their guts. Rabine, you know, I just don't think he has it. Irvine's crap. You know, should I start leaning towards this Sullivan guy? People seem to be rallying the wagons around his campfire.
I've made a vow not to say who I'm voting for, but, you know.
Fair enough.
But
Sullivan is a viable candidate, in my opinion.
Oh, now he's that's a viable candidate.
No, that's why they're
I'm warming up to Sullivan. It's between Sullivan and Bailey.
That's why they're hitting.
But I'm leaning towards Sullivan.
I have no problem with a God vote. I mean, I don't know. I don't see why that's frowned upon in this state. I mean, we could use a little God vote.
Yeah,
that's true.
Anything.
Little right, thanks, Jesus guys. Never hurt. All right, thanks.
Have a great Friday, guys.
And this is Jesse Sullivan. Pardon?
22,000?
Oh, I know. Oh.
Does he hire Mike Madigan to take him down?
This is Jesse Sullivan on when it, you know, well, this is him. He's pro-life, obviously. We all know that. Yeah.
For me, I have, in these very rare, really horrific instances of life of the mother, rape or incest, then I do have an exception for that. But I want to push back that we are constantly in Illinois talking about exceptions on the pro-life side. We are the most liberal abortion state in the nation. We should be asking the Democrats about what about partial birth abortion?
Yeah, for two years it was, if it saves one life. Yeah. And now we're like, come on in Illinois because we want to butcher 30,000 more babies a year. Yeah. Do people know that Pritzker is letting nurses and nurse practitioners perform abortions?
Do you know how many?
Do you know that that's not allowed? Yeah. A doctor doesn't have to do it.
Right.
And he's giving out scholarships to hire people to give abortions in Illinois. It's barbaric.
Do you know how many have from outside of the state have had abortions here in the state of Illinois?
I don't know.
There have been 32,000. In 2021, there were 32,000 abortions.
In 2021?
2021, 32,000. 32 plus. There were 9,000 of those. 36,000, 32 or 36, 9,000 of those were from out of state.
Oh, yeah.
A fourth of abortions are from out of state.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Good Friday morning, the beginning of the three-day Memorial Day weekend. People always forget my brother-in-law served.
Well,
he's a retired colonel
and
in the Illinois National Guard. And people always ask him, you know, say, like, happy Memorial Day. He's like, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
Memorial Day is when you memorialize those who have died while serving our country.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, don't go up to somebody who's still like, happy Memorial Day.
Yeah.
No. You can say thank you for your service, but Just getting that out of the way. All right, as we suspected, there's a number of questions. Why did it take the police so long to get into the classroom to stop the bloodshed? A lot of parents are upset, and they changed their story. They first said this, that there was a security officer.
There was a brave Consolidated Independent School District resource officer that approached him, engaged him, and at that time, there was not gunfire was not exchanged.
And then they came back yesterday and said, no, that was bad information. So what did happen?
Was there a school officer on campus? And was that school officer armed? Because that's what we've been told.
So at this time?
No. There was not an officer readily available armed. No.
But was there an officer?
No.
Why?
Nothing. I can't answer that yet. I'll circle back with you.
There's a 12-minute gap from when he crashes his truck to when he enters the school. 12 minutes. What happened in that 12 minutes?
You got to understand, 11:30 is the information we have at this point. We got a crash and a man with a gun. And then you have responding officers. That's the information we have right now.
So what to do? I mean, Democratic lawmakers, Chris Murphy, Senator leading it, they want extended background checks from 3 days to 10 days, which I mean, when I purchased my gun, I had to have people think that you go in, you buy a gun and you walk out with a gun. Right, you go in, you purchase it. You have to give information right then and there, provide a driver's license, provide a FOID card, which during the pandemic, FOID cards, it took more than a year for some people to get their FOID card. I got mine before the pandemic. Yeah. And then you come back to the store after they do the background check.
Three days. I believe it's a three-day wait period.
Yeah, and be careful if you're signed up for medical marijuana.
Yes.
Because guess what? You're not only going to not be accepted at TSA. Do you know that?
Really?
Nope. If you have a medical marijuana, TSA, you cannot apply for TSA. But you also have a problem getting a gun and a FOID card, excuse me, not just a gun, but a FOID card. And also, the Democrats want to have the government give the government the ability to confiscate firearms from dangerous people.
Who defines what dangerous is?
That's the thing. What is the definition of dangerous?
Can I show you why?
Why?
Because remember, Mary Garland was just saying that mothers at school board meetings are dangerous.
Right. So,
if they have
a weapon, are we going to go confiscate their weapon?
That's my point.
That's a great analogy.
That's my point.
And then what is can you discriminate against those who are mentally ill?
Right.
That's a thing too. So, in this case, the gunman in Texas, no criminal background. His parents, mom and dad, both had drug arrests, and he had no recorded cases of mental illness. But yet, you had a friend of his said he used to cut his face, and that's why he stopped being friends with him because he was scaring him.
Right.
He worked at the Wendy's.
What, and the school?
He dropped out of school, high school, was a loner, but he worked at Wendy's, and people said he was, you know, some days he was passive, other days he was passive aggressive, other days he was just aggressive.
Yeah.
But you call the cops on that? Well, that's not a crime.
No, you didn't commit a crime.
With more on this, let's welcome to the program Hannah Myers. She's Director of Policing and Public Safety at the Manhattan Institute. Good morning, Hannah. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Yeah. You highlight so many of the things that people are talking about and that are so important in figuring out what went wrong and how do we prevent the next horrible mass shooting by, you know, an 18-year-old with a gun. And certainly that delay in going in Uvalde, Texas, in law enforcement doing anything is maybe the most heartbreaking aspect, because in these kinds of events, it's, you know, speed is maybe the number one factor in preventing carnage. And we saw in Buffalo that, tragically, that brave security guard who had law enforcement training immediately engaged the shooter. And even though the body armor protected him, you know, clearly delayed the carnage that he was able to do inside, and then the fast follow-up of law enforcement. It's heartbreaking to think, with more training, with more forethought, what could have been prevented in Texas.
Yeah, and well, let's start with Buffalo, too, because I know that you wrote a piece about it in cityjournal.org. Tell me more about that security guard that was there at the grocery store. What exactly did he do?
You know, he immediately used his long training to immediately engage the shooter, immediately, you know, fire at him. He very likely would have, you know, completely disabled him had the shooter not had so much body armor on. You know, something that I did write about there was that afterward there was this call, you know, President Biden said we have to address hate. I'm a national soul. And And what we've learned from so many decades of combating hate crimes, combating jihadi terrorism, is that, you know, it's well and good to fund, you know, programs in schools to teach kids about other cultures, to teach them not to hate. But it is a very, very small proportion of the people who harbor racist thoughts, yeah. You know, who are exposed to them, who are actually ever going to do something violent, which makes it so, so important. And likewise with mental illness, even in the tiny proportion of people with mental illness, those who have serious mental illness, a tiny proportion of them yeah. are going to do something violent. But, you know, when you look at, like, for instance, here in New York City, we're the capital for hate crimes in the country, maybe just because of our diversity and size. But half of the arrestees in hate crimes cases have some kind of serious mental illness. So we need to do better at identifying who those few people are, you know, with rigor and monitoring them and following up, because that's what we do constantly. And I worked in counterterrorism for years. That's what works, is the information gathering, is the information sharing, is being intelligent, but not letting leads slide.
Yeah. What should the parents' role be in all of this? Because a lot of times, I mean, these crazed gunmen live at home and they're playing video games in the basement, or they're, you know, the case in the Sandy Hook, he was pasting like newspaper articles on the wall of mass shootings, mm-hmm. and his mom was still giving him right. weapons and going to the shooting range with him.
Clearly that was misguided. I mean, we've seen in these cases a range in the Buffalo shooter, he talks a lot about in his rants online that, you know, he's tricking his parents, but he tricked the mental health professionals. They in his 15-minute psychiatric evaluation after he wrote that he wanted to do a murder-suicide, that, you know, he just said it was a joke, and they said, okay, you can go, and he had a good chortle about that afterwards because he tricked them. And with his parents also, he writes about how they were worried about him, but they didn't know he had the guns. He hid them. They didn't know he was planning all this stuff. They thought he was going to community college. So wow. I think it's a big range in how aware the parents were, you know, and in how much they could have anticipated something. But in so many of the terrorism attacks, extremism-related attacks around the world, you know, it is parents and family members and community members who go to law enforcement and say, I'm worried. And clearly with these two in the last 2 weeks, there were friends, there were people who didn't know them but were, you know, communicating with them online, who were worried, who were scared, who said, even if they didn't know the Buffalo shooter had been sent pictures of guns and said, I'm going to do something, and thought, this is really scary. But, you know,
they didn't do anything.
Didn't necessarily. Yeah. And so I think, to answer your question, you know, where there are diligent parents, you know, and people interacting, you know, and friends and community members and strangers online, there has to be more of a see something, say something yeah. mentality, understanding. You know, and also we have so many civil liberties in this country that are so well valued and protected. And I, as I said, I worked in counterterrorism with New York City Police Department. And, you know, there, just because someone is flagged, there's a lead that there's someone that might pose a threat, you know, that doesn't mean that person is immediately going to be wiretapped and surveilled, you know, for years. But what it does mean is that, you know, every lead should be followed up on. And yeah. And that's, you know, with after the Boston Marathon bombing, that was sort of doubled down on in intelligence agencies, because there were actionable leads and they weren't sufficiently followed up on. And after that, it became even more of a priority for intelligence agencies within, you know, local, state, federal level to follow up on everything and to give the resources to follow it up until there's no longer a threat. And I think with, you know, serious mental illness, there needs to be those resources again, where, you know, and the information sharing culture where, you know, even if I don't know that 15 minutes was sufficient for someone, it sounds like for the Buffalo shooter, he thought it was a big joke that he waited 20 hours to be seen and then was seen for 15 minutes and they didn't seem to at all grasp.
Yeah, because he wrote, didn't he have a senior assignment to write an essay, and what he wrote about was he wanted to kill everybody at the school and then himself.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah,
what else? And then that
joke.
Yeah, and then told him that was just a joke. And then that 180-page manifesto, I did not read it. Did he have conservative Republican leanings, or was he apolitical, or was he a leftist? Because leftists can be yeah. anti-Semites just as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, as a Jew, I'm proud that we can be hated by everybody. Yeah,
that's true.
You know, I think with so many of these, especially recent attacks, there's often like a smorgasbord of hateful ideologies. We had this horrible attack in Brooklyn last month where a man, you know, drove to New York and shot, fired off in a rush hour subway train in the morning, 33 rounds with a semi-automatic gun. Hit 10 people, luckily didn't kill anyone.
I think he had
unleashed a gas canister first, and then it seems like he dropped down where there was less smoky to shoot, and so perversely saved lives because he really just hit people's extremities. But he had for 10 years been, and this is a black man, he'd been for 10 years ranting online about how much he hated Jews, how much he hated whites, how much he hated blacks. And I think there's often a kind of a mush of these conspiracy theories and ideologies. And sadly, during the pandemic, we saw these just balloon in chat rooms. And I know, you know, here again in New York, where I've been the most embedded, that, you know, the intelligence gathering has really shifted from the kinds of terrorism and the kinds of extremism that we were worried 10 years ago about to both right-wing and left-wing extremism.
Right.
You know, white nationals, black nationals, you know, it's a range.
Hannah, here's a question. From a policy perspective, how do we fix this? Because I would always, even when I was a police officer, I would always tell citizens, you know, don't count on us, because you can't, because police are reactionary. They react to violence. They react to these calls for service. From a policy perspective, how can we fix this? Especially how do we protect our schools? Is it arming teachers? Is it adding more funding for school resource officers? Because here in Illinois, we were actually a year ago talking about getting rid of all school resource officers. And
some
state,
schools
and
voted.
State of Mary,
some
Murray.
Schools voted at the local level to get rid of Chicago police in their schools. But guess what's happening?
Yeah.
Places like Steinmetz High School. I don't know if you saw that video of the fights.
I did.
Oh,
yeah.
And it's not just there. It's at Niles West. It's been at Niles North. It's been all over the place.
Nationwide.
LT,
yeah.
Lyons Township.
Very much.
Yeah, but what's the policy fix for this?
That's take away social media. Well, that's what my son said. Everyone's fighting everybody because they want to be famous on social media. And people like to see fights.
True.
I mean, I think it's good that we are discussing how to protect, you know, how to deal with social media and the impact that it has on people. But from, you know, as you asked, from a policy standpoint and an enforcement standpoint, you know, I think one of the pitfalls that we've seen in mental health resource allocation in the last couple of years is putting a lot into maybe low-level health resource, you know, mental illness issues, but that are more about sort of low-level problems, which are important to fund. But at the same time, we've been taking resources away from dealing with the most serious cases and having any kind of sort of long-term supervision programs for people that do suffer from serious mental illness. And I think in the schools, this includes in the schools where, you know, it's good to have people there, you know, who can talk to students, who are there as a resource when they're having emotional problems. But to have someone trained and really looking for people that have these red flags, because clearly all of these shooters do have red flags and things that they have actually said and things that they have actually done, to be aware of it and to be, you know, and to have that information shared. You know, I think we'll learn a lot more about the red flag notice system. You know, we know how many of these are issued per state, but we don't know how many are requested and denied. I think those sort of nitty gritty questions about what's actually getting followed up on will be really important. Where are the holes? Because to prevent extremism, you have to be intelligent about it. Everyone has to be collaborating and working out. As you say, law enforcement is reactive, and they don't know what every single person is doing, nor should they. They need that to be something communicated to them, and then they need to know how to not let it fall by the wayside.
And hopefully right. teach.
Yes.
Teach
yes.
again. Teach again.
All right, Hannah Myers, we're going to have to leave it there for today. She's Director of Policing and Public Safety at the Manhattan Institute, and you can read her work at cityjournal.com. Hannah, thank you so much, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
About it. Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, we're going to take a much-needed break from the carnage in Texas and the carnage in Chicago, Illinois, this place where we live that we have to call home for a while, and focus on something positive. Tom Jones, you've heard us talk about it with the UnitedWePledge.org, the V2V run is what they're calling it, and it is a run from Alabama, from the American Village. Are you familiar with the American Village? It's like walking back into time.
Yeah.
And it's a way to preserve, you know, the Constitution and how the process began. Mm-hmm. Well, they're building one in Hurricane Utah.
Oh.
And so he decided to raise money and awareness for this to run from Alabama to Hurricane Utah. Oh. 76 marathons in 76 days. So we need to get him on the line because he's running, if you know what I mean. Tom Jones, welcome to AM 560, Chicago's Morning Answer. How are you doing?
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Good. And our co-host is John. He's filling in for Dan today. And so what day are we on? What number marathon are we on?
Hi, John. We're on marathon number 39 in a row today.
Oh, my God. Now, I know you had to change because originally you were going to run directly from Alabama all the way to Hurricane Utah, but there was a safety issue, correct?
Yes, there's this safety issue of trucks coming within like a foot and a half of me, and they were worried about people texting and so on and so forth. So what we did was we picked out major metropolitan cities that are along that route and run a series of marathons in each city, although continuing to run a marathon every single day.
And what town are you in today? And when do you start running?
San Antonio, Texas, and I'm on mile 10 right now. I'm just taking a short break to chat with you guys and your listeners.
Oh my God. And, you know, close by is Uvalde, Texas. Not close by, but it's an hour and a half away. Have you thought about going down there and running through their town and to give them support or maybe a needed distraction?
Well, you know, we have. One of the things that we were concerned about is, people misunderstanding that for us trying to do a publicity grab at their expense. So we're kind of struggling with that. Obviously, our hearts go out to the families and the friends and the teachers and everyone in that city. But there's kind of been an internal debate about that because I've done that before and then been accused of trying to do a publicity grab on their backs.
Yeah, so, you know what? You're right. I know your heart would be in the right place, but in this day and age, anything people do, especially if you're doing something patriotic,
might not be right.
Right. So I was looking at your bio and you tried to paddleboard standing up from San Francisco to Hawaii.
What I've done on a paddleboard is Oregon to Mexico and Key West to New York. I was getting ready to paddle from San Francisco to Hawaii when COVID kind of killed that event, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. So I wasn't able to do that one yet. Hopefully that one will be next. Although this event that I'm doing right now is very near and dear to my heart. I'm a United States veteran, a huge patriot. And like you said, the American Village is a magic place that allows kids and families to literally go back in time to the independence of our country and become a part of that story. So they have buildings that are recreations of buildings that were instrumental in the Revolutionary War and the Constitution. And they have individuals who actually live the parts of George Washington, Ben Franklin, Paul Revere's wife, all the people that were really instrumental in the development of our country, and those kids get to experience that time, and they get to experience the creation of what I feel, besides the Bible, is the greatest document in the history of humans, which is the Constitution of the United States.
And they
America.
Don't break character; they're in character, and they get to interact with these, you know, these figures, you know, people that are, you know, acting, but role playing.
Right.
But it really is inspirational, and the fact that we need something like that out west. So, how did you hook up with, you know, how did you make this happen, basically?
Well, I became friendly with Balance of Nature when I tried their product about a year and a half ago, had great success with it, reached out to them, had a talk with them about who I am and what I've done athletically and how this their products really helped me out. And the relationship developed from there. And they came up with the idea of me running from the American Village that's in Montebello, Alabama, to break ground in Hurricane, Utah, for the American Village that they're building out there on the West Coast, so that kids and families out on the West Coast will have an opportunity to have this incredible experience. And you're right, the people that actually role play the parts of these individuals, they don't break character. We did a couple of radio shows with them, and the radio host was like, well, what's it like to play the role of Paul Revere's wife? And Paul Revere's wife says, well, whatever do you mean, sir?
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. And I really admire you. And I take Balance of Nature as well. I'm trying to get John here on Balance of Nature. You took Balance of Nature for a while.
Yeah.
And then what happened, John?
Well, you know, I have a lot of kids. And
he's five children. Yes, yeah, six kids, nine. Yeah. I would say 12 kids. There, yeah, it's costly. All right, but you've done this before because you, as I recall, didn't you run 110 marathons in 110 days?
121 in 121 days. I ran from my home in Huntington Beach, California, to New York City. And I come from the foster care system, so I stopped at foster homes along the route and shared my story with them and trying to empower them to be victors instead of victims. Another very rewarding run, but again, very difficult.
How long were you in the foster care system, and did you get adopted or live with a family?
Oh, that's a story all on its own. Unfortunately, I was removed from my home for child abuse in the foster care institution. In a foster home institution, unfortunately, that was run by pedophiles, and I ran away from that 4 years after being. I don't like to use the word victimized at all, but having to endure that type of trauma for 4 years, I finally ran away and joined the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps was a great parent. They taught me right from wrong. They taught me about integrity, leadership, esprit de corps. All my clothes matched. It was great. Yeah. You know, the Marine Corps really did change my life.
Have you written a book yet?
No, it's in the process. If I had a half a penny for everybody told me that I should have a book or a movie, I would be independently wealthy by now. it's a great story, and I am a motivational speaker. I also do mental strength and resilience coach for other professional athletes, executives, people in general. So I get to give back. You know, and that's really healing. And we all are the sum of our experiences in life. That's who we are. So then it becomes a question of what are you going to do with those experiences? Are you going to play the role of the victim and say, oh, poor me, and because of me, I'm a, you know, big time loser and terrible person? Or are you going to say, no, I'm going to use this and I'm going to turn lemons into lemonade and I'm going to share my lemonade with others? And that's been my choice.
That is brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, so how can people help out and donate to the cause?
Great question. And
do you know the answer?
UnitedWePledge.org.
UnitedWePledge.org. And when are you going to hit Hurricane Utah?
We hit Hurricane Utah on July 2nd to break ground there for the American Village that they're starting construction on. So July 2nd is the big day.
Wow. And what's been the best experience so far doing, you know, out on the road there from Alabama to Texas? Do
people
run with you?
People come up to me all the time. No, they the running's pretty intense. The heat's been pretty intense. So I have had people come out and run with me. Although most every time I'm out in the public, somebody or a group of people come up and they recognize me and they're very inspiring and say how great it is and so on and so forth. So that's probably been, you know, the highlight of it is, you know, the human contact and the positive energy that I've got from other people.
That's great. And I would love for you to write a book, but I don't know if you could sit still long enough to write a book. Maybe you can write a book with audio recording while you're running. Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah, well, one thing's for sure, there's a book on the way. It's just a matter of when. I believe that after I get finished with this run, see, besides this 76 marathons, I've run 267 other marathons for charitable causes. I was a world champion prize fighter, and I never felt really great inside about what I was doing. And then the first time I ran from Oregon to Mexico in 1998, and helped a foster care facility in my area raise money for a playground that they needed. When that playground was dedicated, I knew exactly right then that my life was worthwhile and what I was going to do with the remainder of it. And I was going to lend my athletic abilities to worthwhile causes like this one.
Wow, God bless you. I know you're so inspiring and I'm glad you joined the Marines and that, you know, that's why I think you have an appreciation, obviously, for the Constitution, for America, and for keeping our youth involved, because they're so easily distracted with video games and, you know, other things that they forget who founded this country and why
Amy,
we have these freedoms.
Amy, I'll tell you this, Amy, distraction's the number one dream killer, and you're absolutely right. And I can tell you that there's not people lined up by the groves trying to break their way inside of this country because it's racist to the core and there's no opportunity. You know, I can tell you that I've been deployed all over the world, and every country that I was deployed to, including the Middle East, did not enjoy the freedoms and the liberties that we were gifted by being lucky enough to be born here.
That's it.
Yep.
Amen.
I hear you. Amen. All right, gosh. Well, God bless you, Tom Jones, and good luck to you. I follow you. Very often I just check in to make sure you're okay, but I pray for you all the time that you have a safe return to Hurricane Utah. And thanks again for everything that you've done. We appreciate you.
No, thanks to you guys. It's a team sport here. Without people like you, the word can't get out to the masses. And I appreciate you as much as you appreciate me, because again, it's a team. It's a team effort here. United we pledge. Balance of nature, the media, me, my team. My team is amazing. Without my team, I wouldn't be able to do this. So it's a great team effort, and I'm very, very grateful for you and your listeners. And so thank you for your time, because time is the most precious commodity that we have as human beings, and I appreciate you taking your time to spend with me.
All right. Wow. Thank you so much. Tom Jones, a place where you could donate to the cause, UnitedWePledge.org. That's UnitedWePledge.org. And Tom joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Open mic Friday. Call in now.
All right, it's Open Mic Friday, 312-642-5600. Grab a line. If you don't get through, keep trying, because once we take a call, then we drop a call, and oh, my God, the line's open. Anything you want to get off your chest or talk about?
Yeah, you know, one of the YouTube persons, Signor, made a good point about people that are all anti-gun and all that. Do you ever see them? They don't, especially the politicians. They're protected with people with guns. When you look at what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Look at Mayor Lightfoot. She's 72 people. They're all armed.
But so that means what? That good guys with guns actually work, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
I see what you,
So my thing is, that's why I want more guns. We don't have enough guns in the hands of good people, in my opinion. Especially here in Illinois, where they use a system of concealed carry and all that to stop and to stunt good people from carrying guns.
Justin Kosick, our technical producer, pointed out, changing subjects, but thank you for bringing that up, about Bill Gates. He made a recent comment. Justin, do you want to set this soundbite up? Or
Well, he was at the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab's, you know,
oh, that's
place,
right.
And he was speaking about vaccine passports and let something slip that I think a lot of people, including myself, are just horrified at.
Uh-oh. Oh, yes. So here it is.
The idea of checking if people are vaccinated, you know, if you have breakthrough infections, what's the point?
Oh, look at, hey, what,
how long did we spend in Cook County, suburban Cook County as well, on top of Chicago, checking vax passports in suburban Cook County?
Oh, yeah, and then we still have vaccine mandates for Chicago police, fire, EMT, CPS employees. If they're not vaccinated by July 15th, you don't have a job next year. No test to stay. You can't get a medical and religious exemption, but... Wow, then why do we even need the vaccine mandates?
Are you kidding me?
No. Instead of just saying I was wrong, which a lot of these Democratic politicians should do, Mayor Lightfoot should do, and she's dug in her heels, and I bring it up. She's like, Amy, why are you bringing it up again? I said, can't you just admit that you were wrong?
No.
The vaccines are not foolproof. People that we know that have, you know, the two jabs, the booster and the other booster, are still getting COVID.
Yeah.
So, but they won't do it. You know why? And she always says... Because what when the next pandemic happens, it's about power and control and not about health and safety. She doesn't give a rat's patootoo if some firefighter from the 16th or police officer from the 16th district gets COVID.
Yeah.
She wants to have the power over him to tell him what to do with his body.
Yeah, but
and
happens,
that's the problem.
What happens when the shortages cause summer of love? If you don't have enough police for the summer of love,
you don't have anything.
I fear what this summer.
They've put COVID as their number one priority for so long that they have forgotten about the violence, and now they're trying to play catch up with these stupid curfews, trying to play catch up at Millennium Park with putting in, you know, off duty Chicago police and Cook County Sheriff's deputies who are private security guards, with you know wanding everybody down, and they're also, by the way, asking for IDs at Millennium Park. If they think that you might be around 16, they cannot go up to you and ask you, and you have to have a student ID or a driver's license or something to prove. But you can't show an ID to vote. But you need
ID. Wait.
So at Millennium Park, remember, after 6 o'clock, 18 and younger, you have to go home.
What if I'm close to the age? Why should I have to show them an ID?
Because that's part of the deal. And then if you don't show them the ID, they can kick you out. That's part of the deal. I know. That's what
the city
has
become. No, just let the police do their dang on job.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Real quick, also, Ray Liotta suddenly died.
Yes, I heard.
I know, good fella. Well, mine, Field of Dreams.
You wouldn't believe how many guys wanted to play here. We had to beat them off with a stick.
Hey, that's Smokey Joe Wood. And Mel Ott. And Gil Hodges.
And Ty Cobb wanted to play. None of us could stand a son of a bitch when we were alive, so we told him to stick it. Hey, are you Graham?
Yes, sir.
Well, what are you doing on the sidelines here? You came to play ball, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll go warm up.
Yes, sir.
I hear that. I just get the chills.
Yeah. He's a good actor.
Dyersville, Iowa. You should see it. Yeah. I know. And so he was filming a movie in Dominican Republic and died in his sleep.
Oh.
So we don't know. He left behind a wife, and then he's got one child from a previous marriage or relationship. All right, let's go to Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Uh-oh.
And also, Memorial Day weekend is this weekend. Are you going to go to any more Memorial Day parades?
No. Am I?
Yes.
Well, first of all, good morning, Amy, and nice to hear from you, John.
Hey, come on,
I missed you last weekend at the Illinois Freedom Celebration. Regarding Memorial Day, this time of the year, I always remember my late grandmother. Going back 60-plus years in my family, we always called this Decoration Day.
Oh, that's
I don't know how many of your the listeners know of Decoration Day, but her mother, my great-grandmother, was and I still remember her as a child. She was born in Chicago right after the Civil War.
Wow.
And Decoration Day was the time that we celebrated those that died in our war. And that seems to be something that we have forgotten the history of the day. So I just wanted to call that to your attention, to your listeners, because we honor those that give their lives in the various foreign wars, but we haven't really paid much attention to those that died in the Civil War and the unbelievable numbers that of men and the slaves that died in that war. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah. Well,
as for
you,
me, I'm going to do the usual barbecue.
Okay, good. Do they still have, who's having a Memorial Day parade? What community? Anybody know? They're certainly not having one in Chicago.
Does Naperville do it?
Oh, I think, I don't know if Arlington Heights has one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I don't know if they do. I definitely know Buffalo Grove doesn't.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not cool. So, do you think people are going to take down their Ukrainian flags just to honor our those who have fallen for our freedoms, maybe? Maybe they could take a break before they put up the gay flag. They can, because there's Ukrainian flags everywhere, and that's fine. I get it. But enough. Yeah. Okay. I saw one, a Ukrainian, an F Putin and Ukrainian flag colors on a porta potty. I'm like, can we just stop? And on the back of somebody's car, it's like, when we, on Memorial Day, put up that American flag and show some respect for people who gave you the freedoms that you have today. Real simple.
I was driving.
Thanks, Bob, for the
phone call.
Where
I was. I was driving, and I saw a flagpole. Watch this. BLM flag.
Mm-hmm.
The gay flag. The American flag.
Oh, it always goes American flag.
I know the code.
I have a neighbor who hits to a Ukrainian and American, and the Ukrainian was a little higher. I go, the American flag always has to be higher than any other social justice issue that you have, are advocating for.
I'm driving by, and I'm like, whoa.
Where was that?
It was somewhere, was I in? The Rockford area, somewhere.
The man don't know where he is, Justin. We got a problem.
Because I was
you're
driving.
You're in Elk Grove.
I was
My
driving.
My name's Amy.
I was driving, got off an expressway.
Oh, okay.
I was headed to a gas station.
And you saw that?
Saw in somebody's yard.
Mm-mm-mm. All right, Rich in Indian Head Park, you were on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, good morning, Amy. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
First thing I'd like to say is, I'm a veteran. I served in the Army as a drill sergeant for 6 years.
Aww.
But obviously, I'm still here. What I'd like to say on this Memorial Day weekend is to give thanks to all the veterans who have lost their lives over the years so we can continue to enjoy the freedom we have today. And to all your listeners, remember the veterans.
Yeah.
Thanks, and you guys have a good weekend.
Oh, God bless you, Rich, and thanks for calling. And we love that you're a part of our AM 560 family, and thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Let's go to, we're going to get Chuck last. Manny on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I heard you guys earlier, or one of you guys earlier, asking how do we stop these mass shootings from happening?
Yeah.
And I think that there's five things that we need to do. First, we got to restore moral values. Restore lack of responsibility, restore moral principles, religious values, and the value of life. If you don't value life inside the womb, how can you value your life outside the womb?
Sure.
So once we restore those things, I think we stop these mass shootings from happening.
Thank you,
Manny. Thank you. Thank you.
Can anybody hear me?
There
now you can hear me.
Yeah.
I thanked Manny and said, stay safe, because he's on the South Side, but no place is safe in Chicago.
No.
Will in Skokie, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, lady and gentlemen. The one thing we've learned from this last 2 weeks is that we really cannot rely on government to do anything effectively. They're incompetent at best, for the most part. There are some good government workers. The shooter in Boston, he should have been on the FBI no gun list. But they just don't give the resources to have this, to follow up on these laws. And so if you see them, they pass a law, they don't enforce it, stuff happens. They want to pass another law on top of that law. Then they want to have an additional agency on top of the agencies they've already created to take care of that problem. It's just a malignancy that just keeps growing and growing, and they don't do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And that's all there is to it.
All right. Thanks, Will.
Thanks.
I like your navigation system in the background. Mary in Midway, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, hi, Amy. I was hoping for two things real quick, but the first one is, do you have any update on the walking man? Because his family was from our neighborhood, even though he moved up to the north side. He used to always be around the Midway area.
Oh, I know. Joseph Cromulus is a walking man. He's 75 years old.
Do you have any updates?
Yeah, he looks like Yanni. And he was so nice. When I was downtown for, what, 15 years, I loved him. Mm. Would always say hi, very gentle, just... No, he's not. He has burns over 65% of his body, and he's at Northwestern Memorial. And according to Block Club Chicago, he's likely going to die.
Oh, yeah, that's horrible. And if you don't mind, can I ask about, remember Mike from the north side? He was a city worker. Is he on the banned list, or is he okay, too, because he used to call every day, twice a day. He never gets to maybe he's banned.
Well,
you don't have to tell me. I'm just hoping he's okay.
He's alive. He's fine.
He's banned, okay.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. You can just answer your own question. And actually, John and I were working together, and we should have cut him off. I was just, I'm not going to get into that. I was shocked at what was going on.
Which one?
Oh, we'll talk after the show. But he's alive. Let's go to Chuck in Delavan. He joins us. We have to close out every Friday.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Chuck, you know, I don't like when you don't.
How's
it going? Hey, I'm talking to you right now. Well, I don't like when you don't call on Fridays. Makes me nervous.
I couldn't get through. I couldn't get through for the last 2 weeks.
Really? Well, we got
to
get you a private.
But I couldn't get through.
All right, we got to get you a private line there so you can get through, because you have to end every show, because we don't have good weekends unless you talk to us.
Thank you. Well, I'm doing about 75 miles an hour. I'm on my way to Madison, and I've got 1,760 signatures to get my name on the ballot to run for District 1.
Wow.
My party's a going away party.
Wow.
So I'm going to be the next congressman up here, because I'm going to knock everybody out of the box.
Well, who's your congressman? Wait. What incumbent are you running against?
I'm running against Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan's
gone.
Hello, Chuck. Are you there?
Stiles.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you...
Paul Ryan is the puppeteer for Brian Stiles.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going against Brian Stiles.
Yeah.
Oh, I like
so
Brian Stiles.
He's still a puppet bastard.
Oh, why do you say that?
It ain't going to work out for him.
Oh, okay, fine. You and your lovely lady.
Because he just gave the $40 billion to the Ukrainians.
Okay. And that's it? That's the only point of contention you have with him?
Cool.
Okay. All right, well, good luck with that.
I don't know.
And there's,
thank you.
Hey, Chuck, what are you doing this weekend? Let's talk about something fun.
We're going to Abby, me and my girlfriend. She's got to work. She works at a place called Jonathan's. She's a server, and then we're going to go right from there. We're going to go straight to the Abbey and do some dancing.
All right. Well, you have fun, Chuck. And I got to tell you, I danced with Chuck once.
I was there.
Oh, he got some moves.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.